A storm tears through the Adriatic, splintering a ship and scattering its passengers into the churning sea. When Viola drags herself onto Illyria's shore, she's lost everything: her brother, her home, her very place in the world. What does a young woman do when she finds herself alone in a foreign land with no protector, no family, no prospects? She becomes someone else entirely. Viola's decision to disguise herself as a young man named Cesario isn't just practical, it's revolutionary. Within days, she's transformed herself so completely that Duke Orsino makes her his favorite confidant, trusting this boy with his deepest romantic longings. But here's what makes this fascinating. Viola doesn't simply put on men's clothing. She inhabits masculinity, learning its gestures, its speech patterns, its social freedoms. Think about how much we perform our gender daily, the way we walk, talk, take up space. Viola masters this performance so skillfully that she becomes invisible as herself, creating a person who never existed yet feels entirely real to everyone around her. Meanwhile, her twin brother Sebastian has also survived, rescued by a devoted sailor named Antonio. Two identical faces now move through the same small world, each unaware the other breathes the same air, setting the stage for chaos. If music be the food of love, play on. Duke Orsino opens the play drowning in romantic melancholy, wallowing in unrequited passion like it's a luxury bath. He's that friend who won't stop talking about someone who clearly isn't interested. Orsino doesn't love Olivia. He loves being in love, the poetic suffering, the dramatic sighs. When Olivia commits to 7 years of mourning her dead brother, Orsino doesn't respect her boundaries. He romanticizes her grief, imagining how wonderfully she'll love him once she transfers that devotion to him. He sends messenger after messenger, never considering that her no might actually mean no. Then Cesario arrives, and something shifts. Within 3 days, Orsino develops an intimacy with this new page that surpasses years of other friendships. He shares secrets, discusses feelings, sends Cesario to woo Olivia on his behalf. What Orsino doesn't realize is that he's falling for Viola's intelligence and genuine understanding, qualities that have nothing to do with the idealized noblewoman he's been pursuing. Countess Olivia has sealed herself in mourning, vowing 7 years of grief for her brother and refusing all suitors. But when Feste mocks this excessive sorrow, her quick wit reveals the truth. Her grief has become performance, a shield against unwanted attention. Everything changes when Cesario arrives. Viola, speaking Orsino's words but infusing them with her own passion, accidentally woos Olivia for herself. When Olivia unveils, expecting rehearsed flattery, Cesario's authentic admiration catches her off guard. Even so quickly may one catch the plague, Olivia marvels as she falls in love. Not with the Duke who's pursued her for months, but with his messenger who speaks to her as an equal. The woman, who swore off men, now aggressively pursues one, sending servants after Cesario, directly declaring her feelings, orchestrating encounters. She inverts every gender expectation, becoming the wooer rather than the wooed. The irony? She's pursuing a woman disguised as a man, fallen for qualities that transcend the gender categories she thinks define her attraction. While romantic confusion unfolds upstairs, chaos reigns below. Sir Toby Belch hosts nightly drinking sessions with the foolish Sir Andrew Eggucheek, a wealthy knight he's convinced might win Olivia, while secretly draining his purse. Their midnight carousing represents joyful rebellion against propriety. When the puritanical steward Malvolio storms in demanding they respect place, persons, and time, Sir Toby deliberately misunderstands. "We did keep time, sir, in our catches," treating time as musical rhythm rather than proper behavior. This confrontation sparks Maria's brilliant revenge. Malvolio suffers from what Maria perfectly diagnoses as self-love. He's convinced everyone admires him, harboring fantasies of rising through marriage to Olivia. Maria forges a letter supposedly from Olivia declaring secret love, instructing him to smile constantly, be rude to Sir Toby, and wear yellow stockings with cross garters, a fashion Olivia particularly detests. The ease with which Malvolio accepts this supposed love confirms his narcissism. When he appears before Olivia smiling maniacally and quoting suggestive phrases, her bewilderment is complete. They confine him as a madman, but his suffering stems from his own character flaws, his pride, his social climbing, his contempt for others' pleasures. Beneath the romantic chaos runs a deeper current: who's truly wise and who's actually foolish. Festa the clown demonstrates more insight than supposedly intelligent characters around him. When he proves Olivia foolish for mourning a brother in heaven, his wordplay reveals truths that escape serious minds. "This fellow is wise enough to play the fool," Viola observes, recognizing that Festa's profession requires acute social awareness. His melancholy songs about death and rain speak emotional truths that ordinary discourse can't capture. He sees through pretensions and navigates social complexities with ease, yet because he's labeled a fool, people dismiss his wisdom. Meanwhile, Malvolio, who considers himself supremely rational, becomes the play's greatest fool, victim of his own vanity. Sir Andrew represents well-meaning incompetence, his expensive education failing to provide actual understanding. Even the romantic leads display foolishness: Orsino's self-indulgent lovesickness, Olivia's artificial mourning, Viola's complicated deception. Shakespeare suggests that wisdom often wears unexpected faces, and love requires surrendering pure reason. The final act unites all threads. Sebastian wanders Illyria bewildered, strangers greet him warmly, a beautiful countess proposes marriage. Nothing makes sense, but he's not foolish enough to reject good fortune. Meanwhile, Viola's position grows precarious when Antonio mistakes her for Sebastian and feels betrayed by her denial. Then comes the pivotal moment. Before Olivia's house, the twins stand face to face, each seeing their own image mirrored. "One face, one voice, one habit, and two persons," someone marvels. They test each other with details only siblings would know, transforming individual tragedies into miraculous reunion. With identities revealed, romantic complications untangle. Olivia discovers she's married Sebastian, not Cesario, while Orsino suddenly understands his attraction to his page. "You shall, from this time, be your master's mistress." Yet resolution isn't entirely tidy. Malvolio storms off vowing revenge, his mistreatment having escalated from humorous comeuppance to genuine cruelty that shadows the celebration. Four centuries later, Twelfth Night still speaks to something essential about human experience. Through Viola's transformation from shipwrecked maiden to confident Cesario, we see how identity is both performance and essence. We all play roles while harboring inner truths that contradict our outer appearance. Through Orsino's journey from self-indulgent fantasy to genuine connection, we learn that real love responds to authentic qualities rather than idealized images. The place tile refers to the Epiphany celebration ending the Christmas season, a time when social hierarchies were suspended and identities became fluid. But unlike holiday revelry that must end, these transformations create something genuinely new. Viola carries forward the confidence she discovered as Cesario. Orsino learns to value emotional intelligence over social status. What makes this comedy enduring is how it balances joy with melancholy. Yes, the lovers find their matches and the twins reunite, but Fest's final song reminds us that "the rain, it raineth every day." Life continues with its inevitable hardships despite momentary celebrations. Not everyone gets a happy ending. In our world of fluid identities and evolving understanding of gender and desire, Viola's journey resonates powerfully. She shows us that who we are transcends society's categories, that authentic connection sees beyond surface appearances. When life shipwrecks you on unfamiliar shores, sometimes the person you become, while pretending, reveals who you truly are.